here yesterday, but I would just mention what our topic is. We could call it by a number of things, Christ and culture, Christ in a cross-cultural mission experience in Tanzania, Christ and cultural diversity in ELCA. We want to kind of look at all of these things a little, we don't have to look at them all. We can go as slow and as fast as we want to. We're not going to have any exams afterward or anything. Yesterday evening, we spent most of the time talking about Christ and why we consider Him in relation to all the cultures of the world. Why not consider Moses or Confucius or Muhammad or somebody? And so we spent some time yesterday using the model of 1 Corinthians 15, 1-10, which is Paul's catechism of what the Christian faith is. And we tried to look at that in the African context, like when he says the gospel is this, that Christ died for our sins. That's sacrificial language. What does that mean to a people who are immersed in sacrifice in almost all of their living? And the next thing, the gospel is that he was buried and raised on the third day. What does that mean, the resurrection, to a people who basically believe that you live after death because you're remembered by your sons on earth in ritual sacrifice? And as long as you're remembered by them, you're healthy in life after death. Well, we looked at, and I suppose what it should have pointed out to us is that if we are going to engage in cross-cultural mission, we have to take very seriously and learn as much as we can about the culture of the people so that we don't unnecessarily trod in ways that hurt and harm and so forth. We made a lot last night, and we kind of ended on this, on the fact that the gospel is, Paul says in there that when he speaks of Christ at the Corinthians, he says, I hand it over to you what I first received from others. Now those Greek words, handed over, became very important because he used the noun in other times and talks about what he hands over as the Christian tradition. Probably what we have to grapple with when we talk about Christ and cultural mission is that we are always handing over what we receive. The particularity of God's self-revelation in Jesus, that is, that it happened in one place, began with one tribe back there in Israel, and happened, and he was incarnate in one person. All of us have heard of Bush's 1,000 points of light, huh? And that may well be. There are thousands of them out there in many ways. But when you talk about the uniqueness of the gospel, it's that God covenanted with one tribe, and through them wanted to bless all the nations of the world. And then God came uniquely in one person, Jesus of Nazareth, and through him effected the sacrifice that is sufficient to forgive the sins of the world and so forth. The fact that the gospel is particular in that God acted at one place in time and history, and yet in universal in that it's for all the peoples of the world, this is where the tension lies, you see. And this is, we always have to battle with the fact that it's particular, and yet it's universal. I remember back in 1954 when I was teaching a Bible class in the Yambi Middle School on Saturday evening. It was on the Gospel of John, and we had been studying it a while, and then we had discussion and questions, and a little seventh grade boy raised his hand and said, I would believe if Jesus had been a Muniramba. You know, I would believe if he had been one of my tribe. That's what he was saying. I'm not sure that's true, by the way. If Jesus would have happened on our doorstep, if it had been easier or harder, I think the Jews had quite a burden to bear in line with all this. But anyway, this is what he believed. And this little seventh grade boy echoed or foretold the scandal of particularity which has plagued us from generation to generation. Some people say, I take offense because he wasn't of my nationality. Others simply say, like this boy did, others simply say, I take offense because he was a Jew. And others say, I take offense because he was a man, a male. Others say, I take offense because he wasn't royalty. He was just a common person. Others say, I take offense because he wasn't a great philosopher trained in the philosophies of the world. We can take offense at a lot of things. Unbelief is accredited to a whole bevy of causes, but it's still unbelief. What we have to give to people uniquely. Remember last night we said that we didn't have to go to Brigham religion. They had religion. They got a various religiously oriented life, and they had it hundreds of years before I was born. We didn't have to bring them development, because every John Henry from around the world wants to do development in Africa these days. Countries are just waiting for that. But the uniqueness is the gospel of God and Jesus Christ. That no one else wants to give, or no one else is standing ready to give it. In the same way, I remember the Extension Seminary students asked one time, not all of them, but some of them, they said, why is it that we have to receive the gospel from somebody else? And that's really the same question as the little boy asked, you know, why wasn't Jesus in Nyiramba? And I said, you know, to answer that, you'll have to go to higher authority than your teacher. Because the answer to that lies in the fact that God didn't become incarnate in the unique way he became incarnate in Jesus in every tribe in the world. And he started something through Israel that culminated in Jesus, that then says this, we are commissioned to proclaim to the rest of the world. And we have to be faithful to this, to hand it over, to receive it and hand it over. The scandal of particularity is as stark in cross-cultural mission as in any other aspect of the church's life. And to play it down in order to be popular or something is surely an exercise in futility. This, by the way, is something that isn't very well received, even in many ways in our church, or among many of our people in the church. They don't like the idea that we have something that we could give them. That there is a mission that we have to perform. Many times when I've been home on furlough, I've practically been told by people, go back there if you have a pipe wrench in your pocket so you can get them a new water system, or if you have a hammer so you can build them a new school, or something like that. But to go back there and do evangelism work. See, I was in the wrong kind of work. I should have been in development, maybe, and then they would have been happier about me. But being a pastor and being training other workers in the church, many couldn't see why this should have been. Well, Paul wasn't moping or apologizing. He was captivated by the good news. In fact, once he says, woe to me if I don't preach the gospel. And he lowered his head and received the yoke that is easy because it is carried by Christ. In fact, when it comes to Christ and culture, Paul is a rather powerful example. You know, he says in Philippians 3, he said, I have reason to claim confidence in the flesh, in the things of my history, in my religion, more than anything else. He says, I was circumcised on the eighth day. I was of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, Hebrew of Hebrews. That means he was born, not naturalized. Regarding the law, I got my degree. I'm a Pharisee. As to zeal, I was right out in front. I persecuted the Christians more than anyone else. And then Christ appeared to him and he says, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. So in a sense, we just leave it there where it was last night, that we proclaim the gospel in all cultures because we've been commanded to do it. Because many of us believe that the greatest thing that ever happened to us is to know God in Jesus Christ. And when something that great has happen to you, don't you want to give others the opportunity of the same thing? Last fall or the fall before, I was on a horseback ride with my grandson David, Jacob in North Idaho, and we came across this beautiful little tree on the railroad bed that had lots of apples in it. And being good Africans, we believe as long as you can take only as much as you eat, you can take them. And so we took them, and he was eating his, and he got to this core of the apple, you know, and he said, "Grandpa, what's this hard stuff in the middle?" And I said, "That's the core of the apple. That's a little house for the seed from which all the appleness comes, huh? All the taste and smell and feeling and everything that looks beautiful about an apple comes from this." And afterward I thought, that's a good example of what the gospel is. In the name of the church, missions do many things around the world. Many things, many things. Education, medicine, agriculture, justice in politics and everything. But it all comes from the core, the gospel of Jesus Christ. Out of this, all of the mission work of the church grows. Well, now today, I want that we go to another part of our topic, and that is a closer look at culture. Now, some of you have lived as long or longer than I have. Here's a man that's been in the Philippines a lot. Here's a lady that's in China now. And others have been other places, I'm sure, and we've got richness here, and we should be able to talk about what culture is. So I want us to look at what culture is, how does it work, how can we best understand it, and finally, how does it relate to Christ? I mentioned last night that I think this is a timely topic because we, at least we in the church in America, are on a cultural binge. And even in politics and in the world, we're even trying to go back to multilingual language in the multilingual schools, you know, and all of this has to do with culture, ethnicity. Well, maybe the first thing we should do is have you say what culture is, the way you understand it now. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 17 people. Why don't you get... why don't you just turn four of you together and consider three questions. And don't take a long time on them, you know. One is, what is culture? Secondly, how important is it? And thirdly, which is of course more difficult, how true is it? Just turn your chairs so you be in groups of four, or somebody will have to be five maybe. And remember these three things. Culture. What is it? Yeah, mix up you. What is it? How important is it? And how true? If you can't get all of them, don't. If you don't like to put it into a definition, simply give me, in this one, some characteristics of culture, if you find it too difficult to make a definition. But you might just have a sentence. Chairs around now and direct this fountain of wisdom toward all of us. Don't be too far back there now. Yeah, that's right. That's the one that hurts the most, huh? Let's start clockwise with this group. Somebody tell us, what do you say culture is?
You are spoken.
She's or she does.
You keep on turning.
Well, we said it's a way of life and customs, but also it's so, we're so immersed in culture, we really, it's over time.
It's what?
Over time.
Over time.
I mean, it's accumulative. Like, it's not something that just is right now. It's part of us over time.
All right. There's continuity, huh? Mm-hmm. With the past.
That's the yes, that's what I wanted to say.
Right? All right. All right. It's this is, by the way, a very good, real foopy whoop, real short description of culture, huh? There, I want to read a couple of longer ones. They're a little weightier to you, and you can weigh them. And by the way, I want you all just to keep on speaking up, even after we get through the feedback. If anyone has any idea, you don't even have to raise your hand. You can just say what you want to say. So you say it's a way of life, and there's continuity. That is, it's not just one time and one segment, but it's accumulative. Mm-hmm. Passes from generation to generation.
Right.
All right? Mm-hmm. All right? And do you, maybe we should go on with this question to the rest of them and then come to the other.
Sure.
Okay, this next group, what do you say it is?
Yeah, we started out looking at the word in the broadest possible sense, that culture is, as a word, is something that defines all that is human society. And then specifically under that, traditions, family structures, language, dress, arts, food, religion, all those kinds of things.
Right. I won't try to write all those down, but you're right. We're all in it. And tradition, family structures, art, the very physical things and the very ideological things, all of them are involved in it. Huh? Okay, we'll go on to the next group. What do you say it is?
Well, the first thing we said is exactly a way of life.
Yeah.
Then we added just a couple of words here, including traditions, lifestyle, that which identifies a people, including ancestry, that which brings stability, security, and it includes art form, literature, mores, government structure, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Very good. We have a refined group here as far as putting things together. Okay, now this group.
The other three are pretty well it.
we did add, though, it's constantly changing.
All right, that's interesting. You see, they put continuity and you put constant change. Huh? That's important, too, because both of those, there's sometimes a little tension involved in this. You see.
And along with that is growth. It's growing, too.
It's growing, all right? It's accumulative, all right? All right? All right, how important is culture?
So important that it's ingrained in us, it would be hard for us to express to others. You know, if someone says, well, what's American culture?
Yeah.
It's hard to really describe it because it's a part of our lives. I don't know how to simplify that.
All right. It's, but you admit it's very important.
Yes.
It can be.
Yeah.
Yes, it can be.
I think
can
it would be.
All right. And you?
Someone in our group said, culture adds richness and beauty to life and so on, some of the positive things, admitting, of course, that there are negative things as well, especially when cultures clash. So that's far as we got.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We said it's the guarantee of the identity of any people.
Mm-hmm. When someone tries to take it away from you, it ends up in chaos or revolution,
right.
Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And you?
It's important.
Because sustenance and meaning of life.
Yeah.
You miss it if
for
you're
life.
Away from it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, what do you do over here? We'll go this way this time, huh? Just with, well, is it true? I know that's a loaded question, and it's really not fair in a way. but it causes discussion, and that's what you're after. Huh?
Yeah.
Is it true?
We tried to figure out what the question
was.
So you didn't do anything with it?
No.
You come to anything here in this one about truth and culture?
Well, beyond the fact that it's a loaded question, it's true in that the people of a certain culture have that as a guarantee for continuity in life and so on. And mm-hmm. to me, that smacks of basic truth. Of course it's true. It's that with which they live, day in and day out.
Right. Would it have been easier had I said, is it good?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That would have been easier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sort of is the important part too, isn't it?
Important, good.
All right, what did you say about the question?
Never got to this part.
And this group.
We wanted to know what the question.
We felt too that the very first statement, the way of life, was true for each separate culture.
Well, you know, I suppose that one reason that I like to ask that question that way, and I could have said, is it good or is it bad, you know, is that there are some who say that it doesn't change, nor never should it change. And because it is the truth in an absolute sense in which there's no room for change, no room for flexing, then of course you get internal conflict and revolutions and wars and so forth. We'll come to this afterward. When you said that there's continuity, and the other said there's constant change, that in a way says something about how much you think is true in it and how much you think is good in it. There can be good in it, but yet it still can. There still can be room for change. Well, I think it's really what you've done. I don't care what you did with the last question. That really doesn't bother me so much. But what you said about what culture is and how important it is I think very important for us to get at and to think of together before we begin saying what other people think. One of the old classics about Christ and culture is Richard Niebuhr's book, Christ and Culture. It's in the library. I ordered it, so it's there on a table for anyone who wants to buy it. And again, it's not on the 50% off table. But it's a marvelous book in which he has five basic approaches to culture as far as Christianity is concerned. Is culture against Christ, for Christ, followed up in, and so forth, this thing. But first, let's listen to what he says about culture. Culture is the artificial secondary environment which humans superimpose on the natural. It comprises language, habits, ideas, beliefs, customs, social organizations, inherited artifacts, technical processes, and values. And you together covered a lot of those things. But remember this about it, that it's the secondary environment which humans superimpose on the natural. It's human achievement. That's what culture is. And then he sort of operates on this paragraph himself and states some characteristics of it, or rather I did with his help. First, he says, culture is always social. Inextricably bound up with human life in society. People together. And you mentioned society, all of you. It is the organization of humans into groups. That's why it's social. You don't talk about the culture of one person. You can, but immediately you're bringing in all that you are because of who you are with and what has been your past and everything. Secondly, he says, it's human achievement, distinguished from nature by the evidences of human purpose and effort. A river is nature, a canal is culture. It's a good statement, huh? And then thirdly, it is a world of values. Culture in all its forms is concerned with the temporal and material realization of values. We've had a good dose of values both in the Bible study this morning and in the health session, huh? The importance of values and prioritizing that. Well, culture is concerned with this. And here's another thing he says, and goes right along with what you you said there regarding continuity. He says it must be passed on. All of these things that I mentioned above need to be passed on to each generation. They need to be written, and now I'm quoting Niebuhr. They need to be written afresh, generation by generation, on the tables of the heart. Let education and training lapse for one generation, and the whole grand structure of past achievements falls into ruin. There's continuity. Now, there isn't only continuity. We'll come to the fact that there's change. We'll quote some other people. But it's very important that we know that culture has to be passed on. Just as, in a sense, we can talk about our religion having to be passed on in the same way. We said you receive and you pass it on. You pass on that which you received, and thus a tradition is built up of passing this on. And I had to write they asked me to write a little letter for the local paper in Bonner's Ferry when we were trying to pass a school levy to get some money for education. And I gave them some heavy stuff. I changed a little bit of this of Niebuhr, where if you don't pass on, even for one generation, that which has been accumulated in your culture, if you don't pass it on in education and training, you lose it. You lose it. And it's pluralistic in the sense that values that are sought are many in number. It isn't a real simple thing. Well, here's another definition of culture by a man by the name of Heber. Culture is the integrated system of learned patterns of behavior. Notice they're learned. Learned patterns of behavior, ideas, and products characteristic of a society. So you listed all those things, and he puts them in three: behavior, ideas, and products. It can be very physical, like canals, huh? And it can be very ideological, just ideas. But it's learned. Now, how does it work? And how do we best understand it? I think it was Eugene Nida, some of my old missionary colleagues here will remember when we were young and innocent and went out in the 50s or 40s, the guru of cultural anthropology for the missionary movement was Eugene Nida. And he wrote books which were to help us to understand the cultures and the languages and so forth that we're involved in. And he did something like this, and I couldn't find one of his books, but I found another book. A man by the name of Quast has written one on the student movement in Christianity. And Nida and this man together say you can help understand culture by looking at it like an onion. How am I doing? Not too bad. And peel it off from the outer to the more superficial to the deeper. And the first thing he says when you go to a people, the first thing you do is you ask, what is done? Huh? What is being done? What is the activity involved? And what you're really looking at there is behavior. Now, that's the most obvious thing you see, huh? what is being done. If you go to a place in Africa and a man is building a house for his third wife, that's what's being done, huh? That'll lead to some other questions, won't it? Huh? Or all the activity there is. This is the most superficial level. You just observe carefully what is being done. And that does begin to make you ask, meaning, huh? What's the meaning of this? Often when you ask people the meaning of why they are doing something, they'll simply answer by saying, we've always done it this way. And even that is significant. That shows you one of the purposes of culture, continuity. We've always done it this way. You got to have some pattern. You just can't wake up every morning to a world which has no regularity at all. And this is what you're observing. Then the next one is what is best, or what is good, or what is true. But let's look at it this way. What is best? This means that you've moved a little deeper from behavior to what? To values, right? And all of you, or most of you, said something about that culture has to do with values. And now you begin to, this is why, for example, you can't learn a culture of another people real quickly. You have to live with them well. You can't go right away and ask this one, huh? You have to just observe and get to know them enough so it kind of comes natural as to why doing something is better than doing something else, huh? Or doing it in a certain way is better than doing it another way. And there'll be value system that'll come to be. Everyone, culture is always concerned with values. Huh? Now a deeper layer, if you peel the onions more, is what is let me look again to make sure I don't make you angry with the wrong word. That's what I thought it was. What is true? What is true? And now you're concerned with beliefs, huh? And then some say that you even have another one here, and that is what is real. And then you get at the world view of people. Maybe these two meld so much it's hopeless to try separate them, huh? But the farther in you go, the more you are, the deeper you are beginning to understand the people. Yeah?
Could you give us an example of all those steps through something you experienced, like in Africa, just to kind of take through the thought process of those different levels real quick?
Maybe I won't do so well. I might ask some of my former missionary colleagues to help me. But for example, behavior maybe would be when you see a corral, people move into a new area, see, and they build a corral out of thorn trees, a place as big as, bigger than two or three houses like this one, maybe. And then in it, they build a number of structures. That's behavior. You're looking at something. Why are you building eight houses in there, in that one corral? Huh? And then you question, and they say, well, we can't live without the family and the extended family being part of our corral. Huh? And so the value of living in community becomes real evident here, that we have to live in community because that's the way God has put us, and that's the way it should be. Well, you ask them more about these values and the beliefs, and there's usually a sort of a primal myth about the beginning of their clan. A very important member of the clan long ago, and they have stories they pass on about this, and this gives them their sense of identity, that they came from this particular clan and they are part of it, And this clan is very close to what we would call, the origins of this clan are very close to what we call being just being created by God. Then, if you press them farther on this, they probably would let you know, if you would find out, that their worldview is a view in which the physical and the spiritual just intertwine all the time. And that is why they will build in certain ways whereby the importance of things which are not even seen are allowed for in their building. For example, the Warush will have a special kind of a trapdoor made for the body of the chief elder to be taken out of the corral after death. And it's to indicate that he never really left them as far as the normal entrance and exit is concerned. And so there is this little place where the dead are put out to be buried, because he isn't really out there where the hyena's got his body, but he really is part of the extended clan coming back to us in our dreams, and the one that we pour libations out to in sacrifice annually on his grave for, so that we appease him and he doesn't become angry with us, and that he lives well therefore in eternity, and that we also aren't haunted by him here. So even how the physical kraal is built is determined by this sort of spiritual universe in which they live. I don't know, did that help a little bit?
Yeah.
But, you know, you can all do this. You can all do this now with your own culture. The dominant culture in America, huh? Would it be good that we, or should we save it for the last day? The dominant culture, we want to spend a lot of time the next couple of days on African culture and its relation to Christianity when they become Christians, what happened. But this would be a very good thing to do for the dominant culture in America. What do you find people doing, huh? And what do they consider the most, you know, the good and the best? And do they consider that to be true or simply pragmatic? And what does that reveal about their view of reality as such, huh? You could have a great time with dominant American culture in groups. You want to do it? Or do you want to save it for another day? Okay, we'll save it for another day. But this is a, now I admit that this has problems. See, a well-trained sociologist would come and say it's too simplistic, huh? And this is probably true. But this is a thing, you remember this, don't you? Something like this in the NIDA books, they always had ways where we could understand a people just by being alert to these things. Huh? And usually you'll find when you see them doing something that there are reasons for it. You'll find, for example, why do the women do certain things and the men do certain things? You talk about the division of labor here. There's nothing compared to in Africa, huh? In traditional. Huh? Why did they do that? Huh? What were the values attached to this sort of thing? And what beliefs does it reflect and so forth? Any comments on this now, first, before we go any farther?
We won't be here for your discussion on African culture and the changes that we like to call development.
Yeah.
But may I share just one story?
Please do.
One old man in Urambo was dead. He was dead set against girls' education.
Yeah.
He stood against it like a bull in a snowstorm.
Yeah.
And finally he changed. And one day he asked for an opportunity to share some of his thinking with people, and they gave him an opportunity. They had a little stage there, and he took his bicycle and put it up in the middle of the stage.
Yeah.
And then he started. He said, "You all know what this is, don't you?" "Yes." And he said, you know, it has a rear wheel, yes. What's the purpose of the rear wheel and what's attached to it, you know, the pedals and the chain that are being... And they said, well, why have a rear wheel? And they said, well, that makes the bicycle go forward. How many of you have seen a bicycle without a front wheel? Nobody. That's attached to the handlebars.
Yeah.
And he said, that determines the direction of it, doesn't it? He said, well, the rear wheel is boys' education. The front wheel is girls'
education. Yeah, very good.
The testimony of a converted old man.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. How does culture relate to Christ? Let's start that now. We got 7 minutes anyway. Well, you've already seen, haven't you, that unless the risen Christ is peripheral to the main concern of our living, obviously he has much to say about our culture. If religion is just a compartmentalized thing that you stick over there for Sunday morning, then there's nothing. But if it really involves all of life, if culture is a sum total of ways of living which shape the continuing life of a group of human beings from generation to generation, then obviously, if Jesus Christ is the Lord of life, as the scriptures proclaim, then he has something to say about it. But a few things that might help us first in knowing and helping us to know how Christ relates to culture. And the first one you've already pounced on. I don't know which group. Every human community is changing. Some change more rapidly than others, but none are completely without change. We lived the last 15 years in what I consider the most traditional part of Africa I ever lived in. Even though I lived in the 50s in Iramba, I claimed that in the 70s and 80s, in old Anyasambu, they were more traditional, more sure that they had the world by the tail in their own culture. You'd get a Mwarush elder, he'd stand up at church, Sisi Mwarush, you know, we Arusha, and then he'd begin to give a 15-minute dissertation on what it meant. And finally, a Meru would stand up, well, what do you mean, Sisi Mwarush? We're Meru, we don't... This isn't a church of one culture. Huh? And then you'd have this marvelous give and take between... But they were really traditional. But even so, they were changing. The media, they used to walk around with these little finger guitars, you know, playing them, and now they walk around carrying a transistor radio. And every little hut with grass roof has this little radio in it. Their kids go to school. We had the custom of one Monday a month, we met as long as we had to... during the day to take care of the affairs of the church. We met as a church council, about 30 people, men and women. And we always started it with tea and bread because that was a way to get everybody there on time. Because if they came late, they didn't get any. So we had, there wasn't any left. So we had tea and bread and we'd sit around and talk a little bit and just shoot the breeze, you know, before we really started. And that day, I remember I came in and Elias set his cup down on the desk he was standing by and he says, Pastor, why did your president veto this bill we wanted passed in the United Nations regarding South Africa? And this guy, very little education, he didn't even run by a bicycle. He walked wherever he went and lived in a very modest little place. But because of the radio, he knew what the American vote in the United Nations was before I did. And this shows you that things are changing. You know, one of the things that... we sometimes meet is that people tell us when we're going out and doing mission deputation and so forth, every once in a while in a small group like this, someone will say, well, whatever you don't change the African. Huh? Don't change him. Well, that's almost an insult to the Africans themselves because all societies change. Huh? Elaine and I taught a course together for a month at Gustavus in 1989, January, the J-term course. And we had about 33 or 4 students, and we had them every day for a month on this sort of thing. Huh? On I can't remember what we entitled it, but I remember some of the girls particularly were saying, well, whatever you do, don't change them. Huh? Let them be the way they are.
until we came to this little bit about female circumcision, and then they said, you sure don't let this thing continue, do you? I said, you know, you can't have it both ways, huh? So as we go along in this, don't worry about the fact that maybe Christianity plus education brought some changes to Africa. They have a very resilient culture, and it will not be overcome just by a few of the changes that come. It will still be African. And the church that is born and grows in Africa will be very African. Huh? And we want to talk about some of those things as we go along. Yeah?
Well, one additional comment, then I'll be quiet and developing. you know, when people go to Africa and they say, I'm going to really go native, live in your type of housing, eat your food, I'm really going to become one of you.
Yeah.
And the African smiles and says, no matter how long a log is in the river, it never becomes a crocodile.
Now, thank you very much.